Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy, and sad martinis for you today. We get started with the good martini, and it's the latest bizarre, pathetic reaction from the Hillary Clinton campaign to not only bad news for her, but potentially very bad news for the country. This is the Politico version of the story from Nick Gass. It says, Hillary Clinton's campaign is accusing the Intelligence Community Inspector General and congressional Republicans of coordinating against its candidate to damage her electoral chances in the latest flare-up of the nearly year-long scandal over her use of a private server while Secretary of State. Clinton campaign spokesman Brian Fallon asked on CNN's New Day whether the email reports were taking a toll on Clinton, remarked, no, I think that Republicans are continuing to try to trump it up and resurface these allegations for the purposes of hurting her campaign. Fox News reported early Tuesday that Intelligence Community Inspector General I. Charles McCullough III, in a January 14th correspondent to the Senate Intelligence and Foreign Relations Committees, said that agencies had found messages related to special access programs, an even more restricted classification category than top secret. When Allison Camerota of CNN pointed out that the inspector general is not a Republican, Fallon said, quote, actually, I think this was a very coordinated leak yesterday because 2 months ago there was a political report that directly challenged the finding of this inspector general, and I don't think he liked that very much. So I think he put two Republican senators up to sending him a letter so that he would have an excuse to resurface the same allegations he made back in the summer that have been discredited. So, Jim, talk about trying to bury the story with a made-up excuse about this. Either these emails exist or they don't, and it's pretty obvious that they do. So the Clinton campaign, once again, trying to create a conspiracy out of nothing.
You know, Greg, if this sounds like deja vu, and you feel like you've heard this kind of excuse from the Clinton team before, it's because you have. Once again, it's the vast right-wing conspiracy. Now, she's been found with this ton of material on her server, and she, remember, the first excuse was, no, there was nothing inappropriate about it, and then it was, well, it wasn't classified, and then, well, it wasn't labeled classified, and then it was, well, the claim, well, she may have sent that fax to somebody telling him to send send classified information and take the header off, but she totally didn't mean that. And now the inspector general is out to get her because she's trying to help the Republicans. Do you notice that every single time, like if you're Hillary Clinton, why do you keep running into these vast right-wing conspiracies? Why is the FBI out to get you? Why, you know, it's like that saying, if you're driving and everybody's passing you on the left, you know, they're the jerk. And if everybody's passing you on the right, you're the jerk. If everywhere you go, Hillary Clinton keeps running into people who keep getting together and baselessly charging that she's violated the law and that something inappropriate is going on, maybe it's you, Hillary. Maybe it's not just you just happen to run into terrible people everywhere you go. But that would require taking responsibility, and of course she can't do that. And of course doing so would derail her presidential campaign. So now we all, you know, every good Democrat has to line up and believe, yes, the inspector general is this terrible partisan and who runs around making baseless charges, and he's totally a stooge of the Republicans. And here we go again, Greg.
The good news is that we're exactly 1 year away from Obama being out of office. So, folks, you've made it 85% of the way. Whether we'll be happy in a year is another story. Let's go to a double-barreled bad martini now to make you less excited about that. Let's start with a weird day in Iowa on a number of fronts, starting with the, I believe he's now sixth-term Iowa governor. He served four terms back in the 80s and 90s, and now he's back in his second stint, in his second term as governor. Terry Branstad, for the most part, has stayed out of the fray in the Republican primary. But yesterday, at an event promoting renewable fuels, he decided to not only join the fray, not by endorsing someone, but by telling everyone in Iowa who not to vote for. That would be Ted Cruz, and here's why.
I think that Ted Cruz is ahead right now, but what we're doing is we're trying to educate the people of Iowa. He is the biggest opponent of renewable fuels, and he actually introduced a bill in 2013 to immediately eliminate the renewable fuel standard. He is heavily financed by big oil. So we think that once Iowans realize that fact, they might find other things about him attractive, but I think it would be very damaging to our state, and that's the reason why he hasn't been invited to this, because he hasn't supported renewable fuels, and I believe that would be a big mistake for Iowa to support him.
Branstad conveniently leaving out the fact that his son works in the renewable fuel industry. So there's a little bit of action there, too. So basically, the argument there, Jim, is that this is a huge government program, but it's good for Iowa. So let's condemn the conservative who's against the big government action, since it seems to benefit us in a crony capitalism sort of way. Then later in the afternoon, of course, the worst kept secret in Iowa was Sarah Palin joining the Trump campaign.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be in Iowa. We're here just thawing out. Todd and I and a couple of our friends here from Alaska lending our support for the next president of our great United States of America, Donald J. Trump.
So Sarah Palin, kind of an awkward performance, to say the least, almost Saturday Night Live-esque in a lot of ways. She made one good point, though, along the way, and that's that this is her quote, GOP majorities handing over a blank check to fund Obamacare and Planned Parenthood and illegal immigration that competes for your jobs and turning safety nets into hammocks. And all these new Democrat voters that are going to be coming on over the border as we keep the borders open and bequeathing our children millions in new debt and refusing to fight back for our solvency and our sovereignty, even though that's why we elected them and sent them as a majority. So obviously you can dig into the details on those issues. But we've said largely that the Republican majority has been a disappointment over the past year or so. But then she goes and says something like this.
When we're talking about bankruptcies in our federal government, debt that our children and our grandchildren, they'll never be able to pay off. And we need to stop the self-sabotage and elect new and independent, a candidate who represents that and represents America first, finally, pro-Constitution, common sense solutions that he brings to the table.
Donald Trump has never offered a solution for the debt, the deficits, or even mentioned the Constitution, as far as I can tell, Jim. So why the queen of the Tea Party is going with Donald Trump is beyond me.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, Pearl, all your rhino establishment squish weenie accusations at me. For starters, Greg, I can't help but I either roll my eyes or laugh when I say that she wants to us to pick Donald Trump as the Republican nominee and the next president is because she's concerned about a national bankruptcy. Guy's been through four of them. First of all, whether or not you love Ted Cruz, you know, Sarah Palin endorsed Ted Cruz back in that primary in 2012. She's been Ted Cruz is an indisputably consistent conservative. Every single policy preference Sarah Palin has ever espoused, I don't think Ted Cruz has ever opposed any of that stuff. And here she is in Iowa, you know, some might, you know, say the term stabbed in the back. Some might find that a little over dramatic. But what I kind of needed here, and I wrote about this on National Review yesterday. So Sarah Palin was one of the big icons of the Tea Party. Greg, what did the Tea Party stand for?
Lower taxes and smaller government all the way around.
Right. Tax, limit the size and scope of government. So she embraces Mr. Eminent Domain. She embraces Mr. I endorse the TARP. She embraces Mr. I endorse the auto bailouts. She endorses the guy who donated to Harry Reid and Charlie Crist and Arlen Specter. She endorses the guy who was, you know, praising Obama. I mean, in 2009, when the Tea Party was being born, Donald Trump represented everything the Tea Party stood against. And I know it was over-optimistic of me for me to expect some effort to address that discrepancy, some aspect of acknowledging that this was a change, that this is the guy who used to stand for everything the Tea Party stood against. And I didn't get any of that. You know, Greg, I was during that long quote there, I kind of wanted to see if you could diagram that sentence. I mean, it just seemed like stream of consciousness, you know, almost freestyle poetry slam style. Just depressing, because I my suspicion is that in retrospect, some chunk of the Tea Party didn't really believe what they were saying back in 2009, 2010. Deep down, we don't really care about the deficit. We don't really care about the size of government. We've had a lot of very bad martinis, Greg, but this might be one of the most dispiriting because of the indication that the Tea Party, as I wrote yesterday, it really is dead. It's gone. It's not coming back. It had its moment in the sun. And also kind of the really unnerving revelation that deep down, most of the people involved in it didn't really care about what they claimed to care about.
Jim, there's been reports over the past few days. I don't know how closely you've looked at them or what you think about them. I'm curious to get your thoughts on them if you have. And that's that the establishment, which of course wants nothing to do with Donald Trump, when it comes down to Trump versus Cruz, it appears that they're edging towards Trump.
If that is the case, it will vindicate all of their critics. Look, there's a reason to argue that the establishment, or however you want to call them, the donor class, whatever, however you want to classify these groups, these individuals, they're astonishingly stupid. And you could say, oh, They're stupid because they endorse Jeb Bush, and Jeb Bush is doing very badly. But what's more, it's like they Jeb Bush had the problems going into this, and so far they've spent almost all of their money attacking each other, and no one has spent any money attacking Donald Trump. You could argue that up in New Hampshire, you've got Rubio, Chris Christie, John Kasich, and Jeb Bush all at around 8 or 10%, all basically competing for the same votes. And if you keep splitting that vote four ways, you're not going to beat Donald Trump. I kind of saw this philosophy back in 2012. Candidates beat the heck out of each other, and nobody bothered to focus any of their effort on the front runner, Romney. And then lo and behold, Romney ended up winning the nomination. Ultimately, maybe we have a very foolish donor class. Maybe the establishment really does deserve all of the criticism they get, because if they really are letting a grudge over, you know, the shutdown or nasty things that Ted Cruz has said or something like that, personal pique is not supposed to be the driving force in your politics. And if it is, we should not be surprised that we have an ideologically and philosophically incoherent party that is now embracing subsidies, embracing mandates, and doesn't really care about any of this stuff. Our politics are shifting from political and ideological and but the scope of government to cultural and stylistic. And I have this terrible feeling we're going to lose that because we keep losing these things on the presidential level.
On to the crazy martini now, not that this will be any better either. The one sliver of good news in the Fast and Furious story, which obviously goes back several years, was that a federal judge yesterday rejected Barack Obama's assertion of executive privilege to deny Congress access to records pertaining to Fast and Furious. So that's, of course, the gun-running operation that allowed thousands of weapons to flow across the border. Hundreds of people murdered, including a U.S. Border Patrol officer named Brian Terry. Obviously, this will probably get appealed, Jim, but it would be nice to know some of this stuff because, as it turns out, El Chapo was found with weapons that were obtained through the Fast and Furious program, including weapons that were capable of shooting down helicopters. Well done, Obama and Holder.
As someone on Twitter observed today, Greg, it's time to close the drug cartel kingpin loophole. Because if nothing else, there are a lot of reasons to be outraged by this. But probably the most basic reason to be really upset, Greg, El Chapo didn't even pay full price. You get a really discounted rate. You know, if our own government is going to arm the cartels, can we at least make a better profit on this? Is that too much to ask? So. That's why we need a businessman like Donald Trump running things. He'll get a better deal with those cartels. So. The other thing, I observed this in the Morning Jolt, that like Fast and Furious was this really egregious scandal. The Inspector General report said that inexplicably the information stopped just short of Eric Holder. So he could say, oh, I had no idea this was going on. It got to his office. It got to his staff. It got to his chief of staff. It got to the deputy attorney general. Memos were somehow in them, but somehow he never looked at those memos and he didn't know about it. And the Inspector General's report said, well, he really should have known, but it's mysteriously he didn't. And Eric Holder completely escaped that. And the media and the basically said, okay, that issue's done. Nothing further to see here. This is not big. And of course, I had not realized this, Greg. Do you remember that crazy guy down in Texas who shot up the Pamela Geller Draw Muhammad event?
Yes.
One of his guns was from Fast and Furious. So we're still seeing crimes in this one case committed by Islamist. In another case, it's, you know, in the hideout of the most notorious drug kingpin in the hemisphere. And they're from the U.S. government. This should be something that generates great public outrage. This should be, you know, we should be seeing people go to jail for this sort of thing. And we're not because this story has been deemed inconvenient to the Obama administration. So. Our candidates can talk about it. You know, maybe Trump will bring this up and cause another headache for the administration. But it just feels like we've seen this wholesale breakdown in accountability in our own government.
It certainly does. And as we mentioned, all the bad news yesterday that happened politically, it's important to note also the tragedy that occurred yesterday. Braden Joplin was a volunteer for the Ben Carson campaign. He and three other colleagues were involved in a car wreck on an icy road in Iowa. The other three have been treated and released. Joplin was airlifted to Nebraska and later died, just 25 years old. And Jim, I think Mike Huckabee probably put it best when it said it's moments like this where we see how trivial politics can seem sometimes. Obviously, it's still important. But when a life is lost, it really helps to put things in perspective. And to the credit of the vast majority of campaigns, all of them were very classy in response to this and actually took the time to reach out to the Carson campaign and the Joplin family.
Yeah, we see tragic deaths every day. This one just kind of sticks with you because here's somebody doing something for someone they believe in, Dr. Carson. I've written nice things about him. I've written critical things about him. But I you know, this is what democracy is supposed to be. You're supposed to find somebody you can believe in. You're supposed to feel that passion. You're supposed to feel that inspiration and hope. And you're supposed to get out there and they say knock on doors. And somebody died doing that. And as you said, it puts everything in perspective and just, you know, as you said, a real reality check in the middle of this what sometimes feels like the silly season of campaigns.
Certainly. And whatever you think of Dr. Carson, he suspended his campaign, went to Nebraska, met with the family, said, I've done this as a doctor many times with people in difficult conditions and people who pass away. It never gets any easier. And Jim, obviously we weren't there, but I can't imagine any candidate who would be more gracious and more helpful at that time than Ben Carson. On that note, we will reconvene tomorrow for the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Please join us then.